Good afternoon, and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Our goal is to bring you credible and valid information and insights about diverse members of the community and what's going on. That's why this is the Central Coast, and we're presenting you with Voices of the Central Coast. We wanted to address what's going on today that affects choices that you might make, how it may affect tomorrow's community, and how it has ramifications on the society we live in. As you probably have heard before, but I want to share this with you, this is a program that is put together and sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities, an arm of the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation. And every 3 years, the Action for Healthy Communities Steering Committee puts out a report called, this time called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. The most recent report came out in December of 2013. It covers topics similar to what we're talking about today, and how they affect the community and how people see their lives and changes for the good or for the bad in their lives. And that report is available at Action SLO. It's a website of Action, ACTIONSLO.org. The report is free. It is available to anyone who wants to download it or read it online. And today we're going to talk about focusing on fostering, which is focusing on foster care, and I'll get into that in a little bit with regard to our guests. I want to make sure that that I get a chance to throw my thank you out there for you. As you know, the over the last 3 weeks, two of the last 3 weeks, was the fall pledge drive, and KCBX met its goal, squeaked toward its goal right before the end of pledge drive a week ago Saturday. And we really thank you for doing that and making it all happen. This is a program that is part of the community, and you are part of that community. So it is a call-in program, and you are welcome to call with your questions, your concerns, or your observations on the topic at hand today. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. At any given time in San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties, there are about 900 children and youth in foster care. And for some folks, foster care is something they never think about because it may work very effectively and they don't even realize it's there. But for an awful lot of families and for children, it is really a critical part of things that are going on in their lives. The reason for a child being into foster care can be as simple as clear neglect. It can also be an issue of the absence or incapacitation of their parent or guardian. And oftentimes it has to do with outright physical, sexual, or emotional abuse. It's a way that our society looks after those who are generally the least defensible, least effective at defending themselves, and that's our children and our youth. And those children oftentimes don't know where to go and where to turn, and that's why foster care is available for them. But it goes beyond foster care because there's lots of other organizations that are involved in that process. Today we have Jim Roberts, who is the founder and CEO of the Family Care Network. The Family Care Network is an organization that is involved in the well-being and the needs of foster children, but it is not a government agency. It works hand in hand with the County Social Services Department. And today we have Connie Willard with us. She's the regional manager of the Department of Social Services. And they're going to chat with us today about foster care and what's involved in it. It is amazing that there are 900 children somewhere on the Central Coast, which means not only within the sound of our voices, but within an easy drive from where we are, who do not have the resources of their birth family or their extended family to help them get through daily life. And therefore, foster care and things that are involved in foster care become very critical to them. And that's why we're talking about this topic today. Jim, I want to start with you because we think of foster care as being a program that is done primarily through county social services, that it's a government-mandated, government-regulated program. But I know that that your organization is very involved on a daily basis with the needs of foster children. So before we talk about what county social services does, I'd like to talk about exactly what you know, the Family Care Network is all about.
Yes, thank you, Fred. I really appreciate this opportunity. Yeah, the Family Care Network, we've been serving, you know, the Central Coast here for almost 30 years now as a private licensed foster care agency called Foster Family Agency by the state officially. But we've kind of carved out a specialty, a niche for working with foster children, really as a private-public partnership with the county social services departments, and really working with children and youth that may have some special needs, that may need extra services. So we do like emergency shelter care. So when they have a drug raid and they pick up a bunch of kids in the middle of the night, we have homes available for them to go to instead of an institution. We do therapeutic foster care. We have going to do some crisis stabilization. We just do different flavors of foster care that we're able to do more intensive services. We're a mental health services provider as well, so we can kind of, you know, wrap that child with services that are needed to move them quickly out of the system to permanency.
How long does the average child stay in foster care?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because once upon a time, you know, you would think of foster care as a destination where a kid would go into foster care and stay there until they're 18. That's not the way it's used anymore. It's a transitional placement. And I actually like to refer to it as not so much foster care anymore, but as resource family services, because the idea is that they come and for us, maybe 4 to 6, 9 months at the outside, we like to move them back, you know, to reunify them or to permanency. Some of our families will even adopt and take those children, so that it's just a process, again, to move them to some permanent status. So it's really a short-term intervention.
Yeah. Connie, the process of fostering, I mean, let me back up. The way we see foster care, if we're not involved in the process, if we don't know any children that are in the process or know any foster parents, makes it almost invisible. I used to live in a townhouse project in South County that there were 40 units in my townhouse mm-hmm. project, and it turned out there were 2 foster care families in there. And I probably lived there for 8 or 10 years before I realized that there were parents there who part of their responsibilities were foster kids. We didn't know that those kids that were playing with our kids were foster kids. So it was almost invisible. And I think that's probably really good for the kids, but that may also be really frustrating for the process when the general populace doesn't know much about the program. And therefore, they may have misconceptions. But do you work to keep it invisible?
We do. Thank you, Fred. We try very, very hard to integrate the children into the community that they are in. We do our best to keep them in the same schools they're in, the same town that they're in. We want to normalize their lives as much as possible because, of course, it's a big shock to go from your home into foster care. And what we're trying to do is make it so that those children feel as comfortable as possible. There's a great deal of confidentiality that the foster parent has to maintain regarding the children, about their history, about how they came to get there, and all of that. And so really the fact that they're foster children is on a need-to-know basis. Mm-hmm. And It works out best for the children that way. Then they don't have to explain to other people what they're doing there.
So how long does the average child on the Central Coast stay in foster care?
As Jim was saying, it's much shorter than what we used to perceive as being foster care. Our goal is to get children home within 9 months. Generally, we can get them home before then. If we can't get them home to their family of origin, we're looking for permanency for them very early on, because we are very much against what they used to call foster care drift, where children would move from one foster home to another foster home. Each time you move a child, it's traumatic.
Yeah, You know, I need to point out a really amazing fact that San Luis Obispo County Social Services is one of the very best in the nation in terms of moving children to kin care. They have the highest percentage in the country. Really effective.
Yeah, it's. I think in most cases you would like to see a child placed with a family member or extended family member. That's sometimes obviously not possible. In most cases, is foster care used as an interim step in a lot of those situations?
Generally, when kids come into care, the very first thing we do is ask about family. Do you have any family that can take your children? Do you have any close friends that your children know that can take the children? Then, of course, we have to, you know, do an approval process, a background check, et cetera. But we try very, very hard to put them right away with a family member. Sometimes, as Jim was describing earlier, we'll have to put them in shelter care. Say it's a drug raid in the middle of the night or something. We'll have to put the children in shelter care while we locate relatives. But we try to do it from the get-go. And so those children never have to be out of their family, if possible.
Yeah. I want to remind you that this is Central Coast Voices. We're today talking about foster care on the Central Coast with Jim Roberts of the Family Care Network and Connie Willard. She's the regional manager for the Department of Social Services for San Luis Obispo County. I do want to mention that the Family Care Network extends beyond San Luis County. They have a program down in Santa Barbara County that they're very involved in. They do some work in southern Monterey County also. And this is a program we'd like you to be part of the discussion with, if you'd like to be. And the phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. We can take your calls with questions, concerns, or experiences that you may have that we might want to chat about. One of the things that I think that we've heard about, and it's what I would classify as a misconception for foster care, is that parents or adults who are foster parents, they get paid something to look after the children. So there's this presumption that, oh, gee, if I can have enough foster kids, I can make a living being a foster parent. How do you address that perception? Well, I would hope that that kind of attitude instantly gets you removed from the list, but I'm wondering, an awful lot of the public who are not involved in foster care think that's a factor.
Well, it's a really good point, because that's been kind of a misconception that's been out there for a long time. You know, the people that do this are really into it because they care about children and youth. Sure, they get a reimbursement, but it doesn't even really cover the cost of what it is to raise a child. And, you know, we as an organization do extraordinarily tight screening and vetting, and we can really kind of weed people out when we see that their motivation is financially driven, because it's not best for the kid. And so, you know, yes, they get reimbursed. No, it's not a moneymaker.
So who – let me – well, I'm glad you addressed that. I want to get back to something that occurred to me I didn't ask before, which is, you're talking about things that happen like during a drug raid or a family or an emergency where someone dies. What is the first responder in these circumstances for children, and what kind of response time are we talking about?
Generally, if we have different circumstances, but if it's an emergency, we're out there within 2 hours, and the police are usually out there at the same time if it's an emergency. So a social worker is out there, a police officer is out there. The police officer is dealing with the adults in the situation, and the social worker is dealing with the children.
Mm-hmm. It probably happens more often than in some kind of law enforcement environment. Does it only happen in a law enforcement kind of environment?
Generally, if it's an emergency, that's how it is. Although we get calls and referrals on many different sorts of things. If it's a neglect case or a house that's not suitable for children to be in, the social worker will just go out by him or herself. But if it's physical abuse, sexual abuse, drugs, the police will go out too.
I was a non-law enforcement kind of environment that I'm aware of is recently I was aware of a traffic fatality that came up with a single parent. And I believe that single parent may have had some family locally, but they did not have an ex-spouse or the other parent of those children available. Does DSS or the Family Care Network get involved in situations like that, or do those generally get addressed directly with the family stepping in and knowing that you know or somebody's got to know that a child is going to be available?
Yeah.
Or that their parent's going to be available or an adult available to look after that child.
Yeah. The Department of Social Services would definitely get involved in order to get that child connected to their family. And so we have had circumstances where the parent has died, there's not another parent around. We get involved, and our goal at that time is to reunite that child with some member of their family.
But Family Care Network may also get involved, because if that child were to come into one of our shelter families, then we have trained our people specifically to work with traumatized children. So they immediately begin a process of trying to, you know, settle them down, to de-escalate, you know, moods and emotions, and really kind of initiate a healing. So all of our foster parents and staff are fully trained in trauma-informed interventions. And so that's one of the things that right from the get-go, we know that this child has had something horrible happen to them. We want to create that kind of nurturing, supportive, and healing environment for them. So when they move on, that there's at least something positive that's been happening.
What is the difference between a resource family under the Family Care Network and a resource family under Department of Social Services?
Well, I think the biggest distinction is, you know, they're both basically vetted the same. They're both kind of go through the same type of process for becoming, you know, licensed or certified or approved. The difference is that our focus is on that treatment side of life, that we're there to work with children that really have some treatment needs, some emotional needs, that have some special needs, and or we can do reunification services. We can actually work with biological parents or next of kin and try to transact that, you know, quickly, the reunification process.
Okay. So do the families that get trained to do this, are they trained based upon some kind of state standard of training, or how are they trained?
Well, actually, the state has, you know, set a number of hours that they're supposed to receive. We've created our own training program. And so, actually, we have a very high standard of training for our foster families, where they put in probably 2 to 3 times more hours in getting trained and getting the skills that they need to work with children. And wouldn't you agree, Connie, that's probably one of the bigger distinctions between the two agencies?
Absolutely. We rely so heavily on the Family Care Network team to come in and wrap our children in therapeutic services, because they are traumatized. And we work in tandem with Family Care Network. We place the children, and then Family Care Network really comes in and does some therapeutic work with the children so that their trauma is minimized.
So we've created our own core of training for our families that go through all of the issues that you can imagine.
How long do families participate as resource families in the process?
Meaning how long training process? How long do they stay with us?
How long do they stay with either of the programs? Because I'm thinking it's got to be rather taxing. I suspect they don't do it for 20 years.
Well, actually, I have one family that has fostered with me since 1986.
Okay, so that's 28 years.
That's right. And we have other families that are well between 15 and 20 years. We have some that, you know, well, 1 or 2 years. But what we find, you know, which is, I think, very unique and really fortunate, it's a good reflection of the Central Coast here, is that the people that get involved are really committed and passionate about it. And we do everything that we can to support them, to nurture them, to give them the attaboys, to keep them going so that they don't go through the burnout, but they actually, you know, get some time for respite so they can keep on serving.
Okay. I want to remind you that this is community radio and public radio, and you're part of the community. You can give us a call at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. We're talking today about foster care on the Central Coast, and I have Jim Roberts, who's the founder and CEO of the Family Care Network, and Connie Willard, who's the regional manager for the Department of Social Services in San Luis Obispo County. We have a caller, and generally we do not take anonymous calls, but there's a reason for the anonymousness of this call, and that'll be evident in a minute or so. So are you on the line with us?
I am, and okay. I appreciate that. Okay. I don't want to embarrass my family members, the kids who are still in foster care. I'm an aunt who was in kin care, and let me throw out a kudo to Family Care and Social Services. They were both very, very supportive, and the services they provided are amazing. But I want to address this thing about the compensation. When I was asked to take a relative in, I had to quit a second job because of the supervision that was needed. And so I think it's really important to acknowledge that for these people who will become foster parents, frequently it takes an amount of time that you can't even imagine, not just to supervise the child, but to take them to therapeutic appointments, to take them to doctor's appointments. Many times they've been neglected. And if there was not compensation to help those of us who are foster parents that went a little bit above and beyond what it actually costs for food and utilities and all those other costs, we wouldn't be able to provide it because we have to support ourselves. And as you know, this is a very difficult area to support yourself in. So I think that those who are willing to become kin care, it shouldn't be looked at as they're doing it for the money, because for the care and the supervision and the time and energy that's required, that has to come from somewhere else. And frequently where it comes from is former employment.
Mm-hmm. It's a very good point, and thank you for mentioning that. Can I ask you some more questions, or are you...
Sure.
Okay, I don't want to put you on the spot where you don't want to be. So you are, when you say kin care, so you are a foster parent for someone that you have some relationship with or were...
Yes.
And so the foster care process works for and supports you also.
Yes, for the time that I am the foster parent. If you stop being the foster parent, you kind of become invisible and you no longer exist because the services focus on the child. And that can be kind of hard because it can be traumatic as well for family if it doesn't work out, which in my case, it eventually didn't. Circumstances required a change. And that can be kind of hard. But, yes, they do.
Would you be a foster parent again for a non-family member? Have you thought about it? No, I would not. Okay.
And that's not because I don't think there are supportive services. It's because I think it takes an extremely special person to be vulnerable enough to take in a traumatized child. They're very afraid, and so it affects their ability to have interpersonal relationships, as I'm sure Ms. Willard can confirm. You know, these children have learned that life is not safe and adults are not safe, and it takes an incredible amount of energy for an adult to deal with that. And for me, you know, I believe family takes care of family. I believe adults take care of children. If there was no one else, I absolutely would do it. But the training that Family Care Network gives to their people is incredible, and they are wonderful foster parents. So there are people better suited to it than I am, is what it basically boils down to.
Well, thank you. That's a very good point, and I thank you for your call, and I appreciate your observation. This is a firsthand observation that is good for us to be able to share with the listeners.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We hadn't talked specifically about kinder care, so that's the word she used. Is that the proper term for that?
Yeah, we call
it. Or the official term.
So we call them related family members or non-related family members.
Okay.
And it is kin care. Mm-hmm. And as Jim was saying, it is a huge part of what we do at Social Services is place children with their kin. Now, oftentimes these kids are very traumatized and they need extra help. And that's when we call on Family Care Network to come in and bring services to the kids in the homes with their kin care providers. And it's a very difficult job. We are asking people to take these children into their home, love them like they're their own, and yet be willing to reunite them with their birth families if at all possible. It takes a very strong person, related or not related, to do that kind of work.
Well, that brings us to another misconception for foster care, and that is that, oh, all the kids are problem kids. If you're a kid and you end up in foster care, you're probably going to be a reasonably unmanageable child.
Yeah, that's one that really frustrates me because I've heard that, you know, time and time again. And what people don't realize is that these are maybe traumatized kids, but doesn't mean they're bad kids. There may have some behaviors that they're manifesting because of the pain, because of what they've gone through internally, but very, very few of them are, you know, really difficult, mean spirit or whatever. I mean, what we have found over, you know, the life of this organization is that, you know, with the proper, you know, interventions, you know, you can settle down some of those behaviors, redirect them. And it's rare that you just get, you know, quote, a bad apple. There are good kids that are hurt. That's really what it is.
And being a kid's tough under any under good circumstances.
Amen.
And I think we tend to be more forgiving of our own children. So maybe there's a perception for some people that, my child will get away with it because, hey, I've, you know, raised them since birth and I understand that they're difficult in this regard or that regard. But all of a sudden you bring into a family environment a child that you hadn't met until yesterday, and you have to then address their needs and their frustrations. And they're certainly going to be if they're 9 years old, you haven't had 9 years yet of evolution with them to understand where that's going. So that's a frustrating process.
It's culture shock. It's, you know, you've got you know, two cultures colliding there, and that's why it's so important for the receiving family to be able to, you know, to know how to deal with it, know what to expect, or to deal with the unexpected, so that they can help, you know, minimize that cultural collision. Because it's, you never know what that kid's background is and how different it is from your own. And we have our own values and our own beliefs. And so, you know, we try to help minimize the value conflict. And again, the purpose is to stabilize and nurture and promote some healing with that child.
I want to remind you that we are talking today about how to address and look at foster parenting and foster children in our community. As I mentioned at the start of the show, it tends to be a remarkably invisible part of our community. And part of it, it's good that it's a remarkably invisible part of our community, because that means the kids are not paraded around and being seen as different than other kids. But it also makes it difficult for some of us who haven't had firsthand experience dealing with foster children to even understand it's out there. We'd like you to be part of this discussion also. Our phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. We'd like you to be part of this discussion also. We're meeting today with Connie Willard, who's the regional manager for the Department of Social Services, and she's focused in her profession on foster parenting, and Jim Roberts, who is the founder and CEO of the Family Care Network, which is a private nonprofit corporation that deals with this topic and wraps effectively around the needs of the children in the community. What is required to be a foster parent? And I want to remind listeners, by the way, that what's required to be a foster parent may not be anything that interests you because you're not interested in becoming a foster parent. But I think we can get a far better understanding of what this process is about if we understand what kind of inquisition you put the parents through of people who want to be foster parents.
Well, it is challenging. To be a foster parent, you really have to want to do it. We are going to put you through 27 hours of training where you will talk to foster kids, foster parents, birth parents, people from the department. You'll get a real idea of what our teens think about fostering. So you get a look at foster care from the inside out. Then we're also, of course, going to want to evaluate your home to make sure that you have enough room for foster kids and that you have a safe area for them to be in. We are going to ask you to provide us documentation about where you were married, where you were born, and so forth. Because really, when we're evaluating you for a foster parent, we're also evaluating you as a permanent placement if this child should need a permanent placement.
We also go through a real, strict criminal record and child abuse index clearance process. With our agency, the training hours is higher, they can probably put 60 hours in before they're actually certified, and probably another 40, within 6 months after that. And then they go through some pretty clear questioning. We do a social study with that family to really discern their motive, understand their background, to get a good picture of what they are bringing. It's not really to dissuade them or to rule them out, but really to find out how we would best match that family with a child. And sometimes in the social study process, red flags come up. But mostly it's like we want to make good, effective matches with that child, with a family, and so that it's a successful placement for everyone.
I want to come back to that topic, but I don't want to keep our caller waiting. We have Miranda in Paso Robles. You there, Miranda?
Yes, I am.
Hi. What are your thoughts or questions?
Hi. I was just wondering, because I've heard a lot of things about same-sex couples not being able to get involved in that foster care, and I just wanted to see if that was a stigma or if there was actually things against that,
Okay. That's a fallacy. We have several same-sex couples that do foster care for us, and we have no bias against same-sex couples.
We're non-discriminatory. In fact, we've got couples from both heterosexual, same-sex. We've got individuals. We've got retired folks. We've got young folks. It gets back to the quality of the services, the quality of the individual, and their commitment to help a traumatized child or youth.
Miranda, does that
Definitely.
Address
That's
your concern?
Awesome. I'm sorry?
Did that address all of your concerns?
Yes, that's beautiful. Thank you so much.
Okay, really thanks for calling. Appreciate it. You can call in, too. We still have some time for calls today. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. Kind of latched on to Miranda's call for a little bit, too. Do you generally expect and/or do you look differently and ask different questions and have different screening for people who want to be a foster parent who've never had any children of their own? And how often does that come up?
Well, we have certainly had couples that have come to us that have not or cannot have children. Mm-hmm. And so it's not uncommon. And, I think that the questions are no different. We ask the same questions to everybody. And again, it may be that they don't have that base of experience, but they have the willingness to learn the skills. And so that's the thing that we're going to be, looking for. And, it's interesting. We're just in the process of becoming a licensed adoption agency as well, maybe this week. But we have had over 250 of our children adopted by our foster parents in the last decade. A large chunk of them have been in Santa Barbara County. That includes a number of families that didn't have their own children that got into foster parenting, and they ended up being that permanent family for those kids. And so, to me, that's a fantastic success. So we wouldn't rule those people out at all.
This is Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe, and we're here today with Jim Roberts, who's the founder and CEO of the Family Care Network, and Connie Willard, who's the regional manager for the Department of Social Services. And these two specialize in dealing with foster care and foster families. And I'm delighted about the nature of this discussion, and I'm glad we can share it with you. If you'd like to give us a call, the phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. We have time for a few more calls, and I'll put out my normal reminder, which is please, if you have a question or a concern, call now. It's really difficult to take your call in the last few minutes of the program because we get kind of squeezed for time and don't want to slough you off. So give us a call if you'd like to participate. It's 781-3875. We were talking before about the screening process and how long kids stay in an environment. And Connie, you mentioned that your process of evaluating someone is in their suitableness to be a foster parent or a resource family also includes whether or not you think they are a good candidate to become an adoptive family. Do a lot of your parents indeed transition between those two environments from being a foster parent to actually adopting the child that they have in their home?
They do. For the most part, you know, our main focus is to reunify kids with their birth family. That is our main focus. That's what we intend to do. If any way we can do that, that's what we really shoot for. But if not, and a child has been in foster care, it is wonderful to have that foster parent adopt the child so the child doesn't have to move to a new place to get permanency. So we have it happen quite often, and it is the best outcome for the child if the child cannot go home to family or to the birth parents.
You know, I would like to just kind of, again, blow the horn for social services because they became the first county in the state to pilot a program called the Resource Family Program. Mm-hmm. And basically before you would go through the process of becoming a foster parent, but then if you wanted to be an adoptive parent, you'd have to go through the whole thing over again. And so what the state in its wisdom, and sometimes it's not great wisdom, but this was a good one, is that they are creating a pilot and want to implement it by 2017 where people go through a process and they're approved from the beginning to be a foster parent, a relative parent, an adoptive parent, all through a single process because that's the best thing for those children. And so San Luis Obispo launched the first pilot. Santa Barbara is now doing it as well.
Good. We have a call. Let me go ahead and grab that. Eddie, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. What are your thoughts or your questions?
My question is because I have a working knowledge as far as how foster care works within the Department of Social Services and the County of Santa Barbara. I was just wondering how they're helping the county as far as making these homes happen because we've had to place children outside of the county and actually the County of Santa Barbara is not up to as far as social workers because we're losing social workers daily, it seems like. So I was wondering how the network works with the county as far as trying to get these kids placed when we don't even have any homes in the county.
A good point. You want to stay on the line or can you take your answer off on the air?
I could stay on the line.
Okay, go ahead.
I would love to answer. Thank you for that question, Eddie. That is so pertinent and so timely. One of the issues, the biggest challenges that we're having right now is recruiting new foster families. You know, particularly in Santa Barbara County, we've got a brand new program, intensive therapeutic foster care, that we're trying to roll out. We turn down referrals routinely from the Department of Social Services because we don't have enough families. So it's really we really are reaching out to the community in any way, shape, and form we can to say, look, here's a wonderful opportunity for you to help your community, to help children and youth in your community. And And so he's making a great point, and it's a sad reality. We need people to come on and come on board with us.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Eddie. Appreciate it. You make bring up Thank a very good back. Point. So how do you pound the bushes and shake the trees and find more families to participate in this process?
Well, for us, it's, you know, we try to get through every door we can and open every door that may be, you know, closed to us. We do a lot of recruitment through the church community. We do a lot of recruitment through, you know, other organizations. We meet with groups, social clubs. We'll even do Craigslist. However we can expose the opportunity. An unfortunate thing is with you know, some of the cutbacks at the state over the last years, they've severely restricted our ability to do recruitment because they don't really fund it. And so, you know, we have to be real creative. And so we'll call on volunteers, people to help us wherever. But, you know, we've had, you know, some good support from the printed media, the radio shows like this, wherever we can get exposure. To, you know, demonstrate that we have a need and, you know, please call us. Come on board.
What do you do if you have children that you don't have a placement for today?
Sometimes we face that. It'll be Friday afternoon and four children will come into care and we don't have a bed for them, a shelter bed for them, and we can't find a relative. We'll be calling. We're calling every foster parent we know. We're saying, listen, do you think you could do this? I know that you were on hold for a little while to get some breathing room, but is it time to come back now? Because we could really use you. And so far, we have been able to place children, even though we need homes, too. The county is low on homes as well, and We do our recruitment efforts as well as Family Care Network, and it's tough. It's very tough. We're lucky that we place with so many relatives because that really saves
us.
And
it's not just a local problem. In California alone, they've lost over 25% of foster bed capacity in the last 3 years.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it's for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's, you know, people misunderstand it, they don't really, you know, appreciate the value, or if people are going through their own struggles because of the, you know, downturn in the economy. But it's a real difficult issue.
Well, do both of you have an exit interview process? So if a family decides not to participate anymore, you're doing some outreach to find out what it is that's caused them to find they can't do it anymore?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we definitely want to know why they want to stop doing it, and they're pretty clear telling us we are spending more and more time devoting ourselves to retention of foster parents to make sure they're getting what they need. They get their calls answered. They get the services they need. They are top of the list in the team with the social worker. So we're doing our very best to keep our foster parents happy. And when they do leave, we definitely want to know why.
Well, here's an interesting one. When the economy really tanked, we had close to 10 families that were in process that stopped because they took in family members.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's understood.
It's understandable.
And actually that's come up because we've had discussions before and looked at things going on with the homeless community. For a lot of people, the step before you're homeless is the sofa or the extra bed in a family or friend's house. So that's true, I'm sure, was a big factor. That got in your way.
Yeah, and it's similarly when the big fires down in Santa Barbara, we lost some families that way because of they either losing their home or people that took in others that did.
How do the children in the home of the resource family or the foster family, depending on how you happen to have it structured, the kids that are already there, what kind of process do you go through with those children? My thought is, like, I'll give you a hypothetical. Okay, you're a family, and you have one child at home that's 9 years old, and you're going to take in a foster child that's 13. What do you do to to facilitate an understanding from that 9-year-old that already lives there, what's happening with his family?
Well, our agency has a practice of beginning to have a dialogue. You know, we have staff that are trained to work with children, obviously, to begin a dialogue and to talk with that child and that family before anyone is placed, to try to, you know, educate them. But also we'll make an extra effort, you know, to provide some services and supports to that child to make the adjustment, and so that we don't just ignore them, and we don't want them to feel that they've been displaced by a foster child. So we really work to build an integration and where they can feel and ways that empowered to kind of help another child. And so that's really been our tact, and it's for the most part successful. And there's always a sense of sibling rivalry, whether it's a foster child or their own child. And, you know, so that's part of the skill that our social workers have when they're working with a family.
Siblings often don't get along for long after their childhood.
Yes. That's right. Unfortunately.
Yeah. So is there a therapeutic environment to work with those kids or those family? I guess, is there what is the support structure or support group environment for the parents and the kids who are not the foster child? Is there a place if I'm the 9-year-old and things are going reasonably well, but I believe that my parents aren't paying attention to me in the way I want, and I want to talk to somebody, is there a resource available for me?
Yes, the way our agency works, and again, it's different as a private nonprofit kind of therapeutically oriented organization. We provide weekly support. We've got staff in that home usually one or two times a week. We'll have support groups for children, the biological children, where we'll pull these kids together and try to facilitate some discussion, you know, where they can kind of air their thoughts and get, you know, some support there. And I make sure that my staff are touching base with everybody, because the health of that whole family is going to contribute ultimately to the health of the foster child.
Beyond the process of dealing with one child, What do you do when you're dealing with multiple children? I mean, I'm assuming probably statistically we're not talking about more than 3 children in a family that may need foster care, but it's at least 2 or 3 in some cases. You have to find a family that will take all of them, I would assume, but sometimes that's not possible.
Each family sets their limit on how many children they're willing to take. We have a policy that there can never be more than 6 children in the home, and that includes their birth children. So if they have 3 birth children, the most they could take would be 3 foster children.
Yeah, we'll agree the Brady Bunch is not a good environment.
It's not a good idea. It's not a good idea. And we really let people dictate what they think their family can handle. And having said that, when we have siblings that need to come into care, we really do our best to place those siblings together.
And our rule of thumb is we cut it off at 3 unless it's a sibling group. Our basic model is 1 foster child, 1 family, because that's the most effective. But there's times when you get a sibling group, and so we obviously want to work with those kids. But we've really found that no more than 3 foster children in a family, even that's a stretch.
There's a lot of what you have to do that is very fluid. I mean, it's changing every day. So how do the children transition through things that my thought is that you have a family placement that you've put a child in, and then that family placement doesn't work out, and then you then have to look at how to address moving a child more than once.
Well, that's a really good question, because really the system and the federal standards are designed to not have multiple moves. So we try to go to great lengths to prevent a blowout, another move of a child. And if that means putting staff in the home with more frequency, we have even had people that'll go in on a 24/7 to help stabilize the child's behavior, make sure everything is safe. You know, whatever it takes has been kind of our motto to avoid a disruption, because that's just another trauma for that child. And sure, there's times when you have to. And so, again, it just takes the skill and working with social services and their social workers, our staff, to make sure that you know, everything that's been done that can be done to preserve the placement. But if there has to be a change, to make it as effective and as less traumatic for that child as possible. Yeah.
Are the schools brought into this process? In other words, if you have a child that's moved out of a parent environment into a foster environment, is the school district brought involved so the counselors at the school are aware of that and they can become part of the process?
Yeah, the schools are aware. Of course, they need to know that this new person that's coming to pick up little Johnny from school is the appropriate person. So they need to know that there's a foster parent involved. Generally, the schools are really good about hooking up our kids with counselors if they need it, communicating with the department, communicating with the foster parent about what needs the child has all the way along. So we partner very well with the schools.
And what's really neat is the law is that if that child can, they have to be kept in their school of origin.
Mm-hmm.
So even if, let's say, a foster child from Royal Grande ends up in a shelter home in San Luis or Atascadero, they're transported to school. So that their school arrangement is not disrupted.
So there's an effort to stabilize as much of their life environment as you can, even if it's not the ideal situation.
Absolutely. So you don't want to, you know, disrupt more than you have to.
So from the government standpoint, okay, and I guess maybe Jim will answer this and we'll let Connie off the hook, okay, is there anything that and I don't want to – it's Connie, you don't write the laws. I know you're not the governor. You're not a legislature.
Right.
I'm wondering if there's things that that the government and our legislature is not paying attention to that would make this process any better.
Well, this sounds like an awful answer, but there is, and that is that that the state does not value private foster care fiscally. So haven't had a cost of living increase for 15 years, and then they took 10% back in 2009. So we're supposed to be competitive, pay salaries, do all of the, you know, the cost of living that naturally grows with insurance and everything, with rates that go back into the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, that's a complaint we've heard across the board. We've talked about educational issues and talked about the probation department and the court system and the jail. You're not alone. I would hope that I'd hope we work harder to look after our children and they become what we look after first, but it doesn't always work out that way, and I realize that can be frustrating also. You talked, Jim. We talked briefly about therapeutic foster care, but we didn't get into a lot of details about that. We've only have a few minutes left, but I'd really like to touch on that a little bit more thoroughly if we can.
Sure. Therapeutic foster care is an evidence-based practice. It's one of the most effective interventions to work with a child in a family versus going to a group home or institutional care. And so that's our specialty. We've kind of put it on the map in the state and in this county. And it's really, like I said, it's a one-on-one model where you have one child per family. The family is very skilled. They have a lot of the training in different aspects of children's behaviors and in the healing process. And then we surround that family with, you know, social workers that are also, you know, licensed therapists, with folks that are behavioral specialists that will come in and work with that child maybe 20, 30 hours a week on a one-on-one basis. The idea is to, you know, let them be served in a family to stabilize their behaviors, to get them on the track. So, again, as Connie and I both said, is to move them quickly to permanency. And we have had remarkable outcomes over the life of our organization to where, you know, close to 90% of the kids that we've worked with have succeeded in that program.
Do you have foster families that are made up of former foster kids?
We do.
had not thought about that question until right now, and I'm sorry we're down to only a few minutes left, but it occurred to me that if it's a rewarding process for some kids when they become adults and have their own families, it may be something that they feel it is a good give back for them.
You know, when we talk to, we have a program called the Independent Living Program for teenagers,
yeah,
where we teach them the skills to make it in the world after they leave our
system.
Those
are the 18 to 21-year-olds, because we know there's not much funding for those. Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah, we give them the skills up until 18, and then we have a new program that deals with the 18 to 21-year-olds. But many of them say they want to go to school to become a social worker.
Oh, my, that's wonderful to hear.
It's really interesting.
And we have gotten those people that have been in the system that are now foster parents.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got only a couple minutes left. Some closing thoughts, Connie, when we start with you. What would you like to make sure that the listeners don't forget about?
Well, I'd like to make sure that our listeners know that we do have these children in our community, and even though we are the happiest place on earth, we have problems in this community, and we have children that are in need of care. And I would just like people to consider being a foster parent. It's rewarding. It's challenging. You're really doing good for our community. So I would just put it out there that consider it.
Okay. And I'll just echo the same thing. You know, we provide solutions for these children. We provide opportunities for them to heal, to become stabilized, and to have normalized lives. But we need the community to come alongside and help us.
Well, I'm glad you're both working together. I mean, it's good when a public-private partnership works so well, and I admire what you do. I'm pleasantly surprised it works so effectively, because in some cases it doesn't, but this is good to hear about. This has been a tremendously important topic to talk about, and I'm glad we were able to talk today about foster care. And if you want further information about this, both of these organizations are very easy to find. I can tell you that we will do our best to put a web link on the program. And if you want to share this program with someone who couldn't listen today, it is archived. So you can listen to the programs off the KCBX website right away. And then a week later, for 2 years, they're readily available on our website, and they can be downloaded and reviewed. And we'll do our best through our producers to put on some links if you're interested in hearing more about these programs or participating in them. And I want to thank you for joining us today. This is Central Coast Voices, and this is a production for Action for Healthy Communities, as I've told you, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. And we're committed to focusing on and improving the quality of life on the Central Coast. And we're looking at how today's choices will affect tomorrow's decision. Next week, Chris Kington will be away, and I'm going to take on next week's program. It is still in the planning stages, but we will have some guests dealing primarily with some questions about the family court process and how it affects people who are dealing with divorces that involve a party in the divorce who actually has a personality disorder. It's too elaborate to talk about right now, but please join us next week. I'll be with you for 2 weeks in a row, and Chris Kington will be back in a couple of weeks also. That's Chris Kington Barker. I forget to hyphenate her name sometimes. If you'd like to add your input to Central Coast Voices and the workings of Action and this program, voices@kcbx.org is our email address, and you can call 543-2323, which is the Action for Healthy Communities office, and put out your interest in what's going on. I want to thank KCBX and listener-supported public radio for producing the program for us and giving us a venue to do this, and to Jim Roberts, the founder and CEO of the Family Care Network, and Connie Willard, who's the regional manager for the Department of Social Services of San Luis Obispo County. Stay tuned for This American Life with Ira Glass, one of my favorite programs. Thanks for listening to Central Coast Voices. Thanks for joining us.